I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Eric Flack has done a great job for Channel 9 as an investigative reporter. Very good investigative reporters in town, despite what Ted yesterday during his little date session with the mayor at the Waldorf. Eric's been on with us before. He joins us once again, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. You can follow Eric on Twitter, on X, at Eric with a C, Flack TV. So I'll let you describe basically how we got to yesterday and what your impression of it was handled yesterday was.
I think how we got to yesterday was a failure on many levels by Virginia and Governor Youngkin to politically execute the plan that he had basically come to an agreement with for the Capitals and the Wizards to move to Potomac Yard in Alexandria. I think, as we've chronicled before, the political missteps were almost stunning, that he thought that he could just cut deal in secret without a written agreement and then basically just tell the Virginia legislature to approve it for $1.5 billion of taxpayer-backed bond money. That didn't happen. We've chronicled Louise Lucas and her opposition, but the inability or the lack of foresight to clean some of that stuff up before rolling the plan ultimately doomed plan. Yesterday in the press conference, Ted Leonsis made clear, after we questioned him, that he always was keeping D.C. as a plan B. And he gave the mayor credit, Mayor Bowser credit, who by all accounts swung and missed on letting him try to go to Virginia in the first time, gave the mayor credit for not giving up and not taking it personal and staying in touch. And in his words, as he saw things going south, he realized more and more that he may need to take this plan B with DC seriously. So as he got in his shot, we have the worst investigative reporters in DC because we met in the open at the Waldorf. I wanted to tell him, Ted, on behalf of all investigative journalists and journalists, we don't make enough to hang out at the Waldorf because we're not billionaires. But, you know, he had his little moment. Yeah. But they had ongoing discussions. And some of the action, according to Leonsis, that D.C. began to take in the wake of his proposed move, getting serious about revamping and revitalizing that 10-quarter Gallery Place area, and getting serious about making sure it's policed, and getting serious about taking care of the crime, all of a sudden made him feel better about the potential of a $500 million renovation. And it's now up to 515 because they're also going to, and I actually think this is cool, spend $15 million in revamping the city as that gallery place, you know, open area between Clyde's and Capital One, if you've ever been down there. And that's, it's going to make it more in the vision he had for what he was trying to Virginia. And then they sweetened the pot. They said, take over Gallery Place, which again allows him great financial opportunity. They got him more parking. They allowed him to, as he said, expand his footprint, not to the extent he would have been able to do in Virginia, but enough that he was okay with and ultimately embraced the idea of staying in D.C. It came together very quickly. News started to break. Whispers started to break yesterday afternoon. I think I first heard about this maybe at 2:30, 3 o'clock, something along those lines. There was a members-only council meeting just yesterday afternoon to make sure everybody was on board. Again, something Governor Youngkin in Virginia didn't do because this hasn't passed, but they know it's going to pass on Tuesday because they've already gotten together and said, okay, are we cool with this? Are we good with this? And at that point, they called a press conference in an hour. And there we were in one of those new luxury areas at Capital One with, as you said, date night for Ted and Muriel. So it was all remarkable.
Well, I think, you know, and we talked about it yesterday in the show, the Twitter barrage by him earlier in the day was certainly a tell that something may have been coming, right?
A huge tell. I just didn't think it was going to happen in hours. But he did say at the press conference, he almost acknowledged that he was tweeting that stuff out because he knew he was going to be standing in front of us tonight. He said that night yesterday. He said that.
Yeah. So you've said a lot. Let me just mention, you know, I just rolled my eyes like I'm sure many did when he talked about date night with the mayor and the main couch at the Waldorf. And we've got to have the worst, you know, investigative and, you know, infrastructure, because, I mean, God knows he's so smart. But the irony of that is he essentially, this guy that fancies himself to be the biggest brand in town, wasn't even recognized, you know, sitting on the main couch. Because exactly. Typically, you know this, somebody would have saw him, somebody would have called, you know, you or an investigative reporter or tweeted out, hey, the mayor and Ted are, you know, are together in the main couch at the Waldorf, but nobody even recognized it. But anyway, I digress. You know, what you said at the beginning, to me, look, I'm thrilled, Eric, because all's well that ends well, and this is what I personally wanted. I didn't want them to leave the city. I think it's the best thing for not just the city, but the actual DMV, not the Delaware to the North Carolina border DMV that Ted likes to refer to, but the actual DMV. But you said something at the beginning. That press conference with Youngkin, how didn't somebody recognize that this was so far from a done deal and say, we can't either do this press conference or we can't sound so definitive like it's done? And, you know, I said it at the time, and I think you and I talked about this on the air. I thought he showed very little self-awareness with respect to what the reaction would be to him leaving D.C. But why didn't somebody jump in and why didn't he recognize, wait a minute, this is Virginia. These things are hard. The money's not there yet. We haven't even gotten to the NIMBYs. They never did, by the way. Why so definitive on that day?
I've asked that question to people who have a lot of knowledge of the way these things work, and the answer I get is twofold. One is arrogance, that he just thought that he was somebody, that he saw a vision and that everybody else would see the same vision. The second explanation I've been told is that he comes from a business background and just running, you know, businesses. And in that world, what the guy at the top goes. And it showed a huge lack of awareness and a huge failure by the people around him to say, look, we may want to approach this with a different tone and maybe a little less fanfare. I asked one of the monumental people who was tasked with trying to get this through the legislature up there in Virginia, did he and Ted Leonsis spike the ball? And I think I've used this term with you before.
Yeah, you did.
Spike the ball before they crossed the goal line. And his answer, and that what they continue to stand by, is, well, we had to make an announcement at some point, and we can't just negotiate this with the entire legislature behind closed doors and expect that, you know, we're not going to be able to kind of control the narrative and it's just going to leak out, which may be true, but there is a middle ground there.
Yes.
That they just failed to even acknowledge, and that D.C., although it's less council members, but D.C. got it right. You know, D.C. is bringing its council members together. They approved the money last December. Now is in the midst of trying to feverishly, you know, last second keep Leonsis and the Wizards and the Cavs from even trying to move to Virginia. But, like, they've already passed a resolution that this is going to be in the budget. Like, they had everybody on board. They brought them again on board at the last second yesterday to make sure we're all good. And there is just none of that. And I think, you know, I don't know if this is true. What Leonsis said a couple of times during the press conference last night is that he was blindsided at how bad a business people Virginia were, and that D.C. is much better business people than Virginia are. And you know, whether that's a swipe at you know, Youngkin, who he says he's still very, you know, friendly with, and who gave him permission to continue to negotiate with D.C. just in case, whether that's a swipe at, you know, Louise Lucas for blocking the deal or what have you. You know, it was clear as we got into this thing, and especially starting about a month ago, that they just never thought they had to do the legwork on the front side without, you know, consequences by announcing a deal that nobody was over there was really on board with.
You know, we're talking to Eric Flack from WUSA TV9. You mentioned about that press conference arrogance. I think there was some anger there, too, from his standpoint. I think he wanted to stick it to D.C. to show them, see, I wasn't bluffing. Because, look, at the end of the day, Ted probably had every reason to seek out something new because of the city's lack of response. You know, the city slow rolling him, the city, you know, potentially saying we'll do something, but then saying, yeah, but we don't have the money up front. You're going to have to put it up front and we'll raise it in bonds over the next 6 to 10 years. So I get where Ted's frustration came from, but as you said, it really lacked some sort of understanding of how things work there. And maybe they could say, look, we didn't see Louise Lucas coming. But am I right to say that it never even got to the point where, you know, maybe the biggest pushback would have come from, which would have been the not in my backyard people? We never even got to that point.
He still had to cross that hurdle. Everything I've been told is that I don't know how the protests would have been loud. But I had been told they felt much better once
about
we got
that.
Into this. They felt much better about, you know, the mayor was on board and they had members of the council already on board. They almost like did the work in Alexandria, but forgot to do the work in Richmond, in the legislature. And I think you're right in that there was anger on Ted's part. And I think there are reasons you can say it was justified. You know, I think from his perspective, you know, I think he trusted Youngkin to get this done, quite honestly. I think he made an assumption, and it's a mistake on his part. I think he acknowledged mistakes have been made by him throughout this process. But, you know, he has a team. They brought in so many consultants. I have gotten emails and calls from, like, they're not even all monumental. They're outsourced. They're different agencies. I mean, it wasn't one. It was multiple people.
And they're still going to hurt after all this is said and done with all consultants. I'm kidding. Oh, that's basically what happened there. I mean, it was like there were so many cooks in the kitchen, and then it ended up being Tommy Shepard. And I love Tommy, but it was like, yeah, exactly. I mean, unbelievable. Make a decision. We're talking to Eric Flack. I wanted to bring something up here before we get to what this means for the football team. But there was a level, too, of a bit of disingenuousness yesterday. I mean, you talked about Plan B, but didn't they just have discussions with Wes Moore in Maryland? Weren't they looking at Maryland as a possibility, too?
Yes. Listen,
did he think we forgot about that part of the story?
Well, I don't know how serious that was. Okay. And I don't know which way that phone call went. I think people assumed that it was Ted calling Wes Moore rather than ambitious governor reaching mm-hmm. out and saying, what about Maryland? You know, I think those reports were pretty general. There was a conversation. I just am not sure how that conversation was initiated. I've had some conversations with some people. All I would say is I'm not sure which way that phone call went and how much that was Ted shopping his team around the V, around the DMV, rather than, you know, Maryland saying, hey, knock, knock, you know, we're open for business too. We got a stadium fund over here. You know, what do you think? It became clear, and I think the Monumental people were pretty upset about, I think a lot of people were pretty upset about that report and how it made them look. And we now know in retrospect, it was because these discussions with D.C. were extremely, you know, and they're trying to do damage control because, you know, people are making it seem like, you know, Ted's, you know, playing off all the regions against each other. So I just don't know how serious that was.
I want to look forward here in a moment because, again, for me, and I think a lot of people on this day, it's like, okay, I don't really know how we got here or care that much about it. I'm glad we got here, though. But one last thing with respect to DC's offer, which ended up being $515 million. Was there ever a chance that DC was going to take Ted's position, which was, uh-oh, Virginia, it's not going to happen. Where am I going to go? And try to leverage that situation into a lesser offer than their 11th hour offer before the press conference, you know, a couple of months ago?
There was never a chance of that.
Good.
They made it clear early on that that money would and remain on the table. And I think politically, the mayor almost had such a disastrous asterisk on her legacy as the mayor who was blamed for letting the Wizards and the Capitals leave the district and had already played footsie and tried to negotiate and tried to not give, you know, Leonsis what he wanted, which was $600 million. That I think the mayor and her administration felt so that they burned themselves so badly that they were never, ever going to make that mistake again.
It was a gift horse, really. They were lucky that Louise Lucas came around.
Absolutely. They weren't going to screw it up a second time. And they weren't going to mess around with money to screw it up a second time. When they saw that door cracked open, they were ready to kick it down, which is why they increased the sweetening of the pot.
Right. Yeah. So we'll get to, I want to ask you about what you think this means for the football team. But before that, so what is the 500 or the $800 million in aggregate, including Monumental? What's it going to look like down there when it's all done? And what kind of project is this and how long will it take? And will they be able to play while they're doing the work, games there? I haven't read enough about that.
I had some conversations early on with people over there when they basically told me they were looking at both these options. And I was like, what do those look like? And they said, well, Potomac Yard. And then they said, you know, a phased in renovation at Capital One, where you would be able to have the teams play and not be displaced, but you would do the renovation in phases, which I think is why you see the money that DC is giving to Monumental spaced out over 3 years. I'm actually looking to find out, you know, like what more specifics they can give us about those questions. But here are some of the things that were told to me. First of all, and I think most interesting, is the way the seating in the bowl is at Capital One. It is a old school seating where it starts around the court or the ice, and then as you get higher, you move farther back as well. If you've been to a new arena, the way the seating is that the higher up you get, yeah, it's more vertical. So, yeah, you're high, but you're still closer to the court. Now, this seems like a mammoth task to pull off, but I know that there was conversations about trying to redo the seating to make that seating structure, that seating bowl, more in line with today's newer arenas. They have already started the process of increasing the luxury amenities for their VIPs, because that's what professional sports has become. People want to spend a lot of money for a ticket, but also they want to have a really, really first-class experience. So, for instance, because Ted had already started investing in some of this, the press conference yesterday was held in one of those new clubs that's right there on 7th Street. Mm-hmm. They're going to be adding to that. If you, the Etihad Airways luxury club, it's beautiful. It's down there, like floor level. It doesn't actually have sight lines to the court or to the ice. And they have added, you know, some of those areas where you can kind of sit on the end lines, especially for Wizards games, and just sit in a tabletop with having a server and literally be looking out on the game. But it's limited. And I think in a larger sense, you know, what today's arenas look like is you have these luxury areas that also have clear sight lines to the game. So you're at a sporting event, but you're also kind of like hanging out at a bar all at the same time. And so they're going to work on the entrances. I've heard of some suggestions of changing the outside look as well. Mm-hmm. It's a very stone building. It's not very, there's not a lot of glass. I know that was something they didn't love.
Right.
So I think the next thing is, you know, when are we going to roll out the plans? And so I think that me and I'm sure and a number of other people are starting to ask those questions.
All right. Last one for Eric Flack from WUSA Channel 9. What do you think yesterday's news means for the probability or possibility that the Washington football franchise ends up in D.C.?
So I'm not as much of a doomsday, this means they're not coming back to RFK, as I have seen some other very smart people suggesting on social media. The mayor's office said again, reinforced to me again yesterday, this changes nothing with the football team. Mayor Bowser had said, we can do them both. You know, obviously there is going to be more opposition on the council side for the football stadium than there was for the arena money, that's been well documented. And the money becomes an issue, but Josh Harris has said, and it's basketball arenas are not football arenas, but Josh Harris is, you know, trying to pay for a new arena in Philadelphia for the Sixers by himself. He's already talking about contributing as much private capital as he can for the new stadium. Obviously, there are less obstacles in Maryland, and we've heard the quotes that they're deep into discussions on Maryland, and right now D.C. still doesn't have the land, but it's trending that way. So I don't think it means that there's no chance they're going to return to RFK. The only thing I'm curious about is that, you know, Ted has cited in that email to his employees that one of the three practice facility potential sites is RFK.
Right.
So I'm unclear if the city's like, if this football thing doesn't, you know, come to fruition, and we should know that here probably in about a year, what they're going to do site-wise, I think, or less, then, you know, you have first dibs on that site. If not, let's figure out something else. So that's a big question, though.
Eric, thanks. As always, really appreciate it. Good work on this story over the last several months. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Later.
Yep. Eric Flack, everybody, from WUSA Channel 9 on X at Eric Flack TV. Jacob Hester is a radio host in Baton Rouge. He was at Jaden Daniels' pro day yesterday. He will join us next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Daniels on first down. Gonna take a shot to the end zone. And Neighbors comes up with it. Malik Neighbors, outstanding touchdown catch from Jaden Daniels, who's a perfect 12 for 12 to start the game.
Yeah, he had a couple of those. Pro day yesterday for Jaden Daniels down in Baton Rouge. Washington met with him afterwards. Today is Drake May. Apparently Washington will meet with Drake May prior to his pro day today. Jumping on with us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, is Jacob Hester. Jacob had a really good career at LSU in the late 2000s and then was with the Chargers and Phillip Rivers in some of his early years out in San Diego. Played at LSU, is a Sirius XM radio host and analyst, also on 104.5 in Baton Rouge, and he joins us right now. Thanks so much for the time, Jacob. I do want to talk about primarily Jaden Daniels, but I do remember you as a player. You had some really good seasons at LSU, and then you got a chance to play with one of my people joke with me about how much I loved Phillip Rivers, and I think he should be, you know, if not first ballot, no worse than second ballot Hall of Famer. You were there with him in some of his early seasons. What was it like to play with him?
Oh, I can talk about PR-17 all day long. Maybe the best teammate that I ever had. I mean, just an incredible teammate. I mean, high intensity in everything that he did. The best trash talker that I was ever around. And he did it without cursing, which is kind of difficult to do, but he got it done. The ultimate family man. I mean, he's just somebody that, as for me, like I was a rookie, and I think Phillip was in his fourth year maybe when I was a rookie, but like to see that how he was a father and the player that he was and the leader that he was in the locker room, the husband that he was, like he was like somebody for me that I looked up to. And so I still keep in contact with Phillip all the time. I went and watched him coach some high school football down in Alabama early last year, their opening game there. And gosh, what a great teammate. I agree with you. First ballot Hall of Famer. I know he never won the Super Bowl, but he was a part of so many good teams, and he was the reason why those teams were competitive every single year.
You know, you were you played for Les Miles, one of the all-time characters, you know, at LSU. Jamarcus Russell was your quarterback there before he became the number one pick in the draft. You've been around a lot of these guys, you know, both the guys that have succeeded and the guys that have not succeeded. So with that in mind, tell me about Jaden Daniels. You've watched his career, the 2 years in Baton Rouge. What do you think Washington should do at number two if he's on the board?
Yeah, so I was very fortunate in my career to be around great quarterbacks. Like, even going back to high school, my high school quarterback was John David Booty, who won two Rose Bowls at USC. So I've been very fortunate. I ended my career in Denver with Peyton Manning. And so, like, to know good quarterback play, I think it's something that you can see and you can feel and you can realize that these guys are doing whatever it takes to go out there and win football games. And Jaden Daniels this year, you turn on the tape, you go to the pro day yesterday, like, there's no denying who he is. I think he's the best deep ball thrower in this draft. I think he's the best one we've seen actually in a couple of years. Like, he is a really talented player. But when it comes to, like, the improvements that he made, that's the thing that I'm going to circle the most. He was a really good player in 2022, but he turned himself into an elite player in 2023, and he did the things that he was not doing well in 2022 and made him maybe his biggest strength in 23. That is so hard to do, certainly as a young player, not even in the NFL. If you'll go back and watch the tape, in 2022, they wanted him to take more chances, to throw the deep ball more, and he was playing it a little safe. And you come in this year, and again, I think he's the best deep ball thrower in this draft, and that's something because he worked on it. He willed himself to be that type of player, and so his work ethic is incredible. We know his athletic ability. We know how many games he's played in college. I'm a big fan of Jaden Daniels. I think for him, knowing that he had to improve on the things that he had to improve on, and not only improving, but taking them from questionable to elite, that just doesn't happen. And again, like, me being around the quarterbacks that I have seen them have the ability to work every single day, get themselves better, and it takes a special person and a special kind of player to make that transition.
You talked about the willingness more this year than in 2022 to kind of let it loose, especially on the deep ball. What else did he improve on, you know, in a significant way from the first year until this year? Because, you know, this time last year, he was a projected, you know, day two pick, best case. So what else did he just absolutely improve to the level that he became, you know, in conversation for one of the top two picks in the draft?
Well, we all know that he has the ability to run away from almost every defender. You turn on the tape, you see a 55-yarder, an 80-yarder against Florida, and Florida might not be up to their standard, but we know they've got athletic DBs, and he's pulling away from those DBs. So we've known that about Jaden Daniels' game. He has that ability. He's got some Lamar Jackson in him, and I don't like throwing comparables like that out there because Lamar's one of the best in the NFL, but he has that to him. We've known that, though. So knowing that he has that skill set, but how much he improved in the pocket this year, knowing when to run, knowing when to find an open window because you still have time. You don't have to run. You don't have to leave this clean pocket. And he had a really good offensive line at LSU, and his pocket awareness. Hey, you know what? I could take off and maybe get a 7-yard gain here on the ground, but also if I hang in here a little bit longer, I can complete an 18-yard dig route over the middle to a first-round receiver who, after the catch, can turn it in to an 80-yard touchdown. That's really where he grew as well this year for me, knowing when in the pocket and where to move as well, right? And so many times, because when you have that athletic ability, when you can just pull it down, and oftentimes you're the most athletic guy on the field, well, that's going to be your first instinct. But he got away from that. He ran when he had to. They designed some quarterback runs for him, but he also understood this pocket's clean, right? Just because the clock might be going off in my head, I have to have an awareness that I still have time. I still can step up, step to the right, get a throw off, and then Malik Nabers or Brian Thomas Jr. can take it the distance. And he really improved on that this year. You watch the tape in 22, sometimes he would leave a clean pocket and he'd pick up 7-8 yards. And that's not a bad play, but the bigger play is when you know where you're at, you know the awareness, and you throw it to a receiver down the field who can make a play.
Yeah. You're talking to two big fans of Jaden Daniels who just, I watched every single game this year and I thought it was incredible. I even think there were games last year and you talked about the improvement, but the Bama fourth quarter and then the overtime was incredible. And one of the things I wanted you to speak to is I think there's like a tremendous like innate poise that he has. Like he seems to be almost oblivious at times to pressure and maybe even game situation pressure. Is that what you see? Or is it, because you could turn it into a negative, is it too casual?
No, I don't think it's too casual. In fact, it's hard to be too casual in the pocket. I think it, when you look at quarterbacks that kind of panic a little bit and they get out of what we're just talking about, a clean pocket, like that is something that would be a negative check mark against. I don't think you can be too casual because he also, like, he does have the ultimate X factor of even if it's breaking down, he has the athletic ability to get out of a pocket that most quarterbacks would get sacked in because of how athletic he is. But I am glad that you brought up 2022 in a positive way because I don't want this to sound like I'm talking about all negative. He was a really good player in the SEC in 2022. But it is amazing to see the improvements that he made off a really good season to turn into an elite player, a Heisman Trophy winner. You mentioned a couple of games there, Alabama being one of them. There was a three-week stretch. I think it was Ole Miss, Florida, then Alabama. He was the best quarterback in the NCAA last year. During that three-game stretch, there was no quarterback that was playing better than Jaden Daniels. Then he turned it into a consistent all season long, where he was playing at that level. But last year, no, there's plenty of tape that you can go back in. And you're right, like, even if we're not talking about a calmness just in the pocket when pressure's around you, the calmness in the moment. I mean, he scores – think about this. He scores in overtime on the first play. You know, Bryce Young goes and they score for Alabama. He gets the ball. It's a read option. He scores, goes 25 yards, touchdown, right? And instead of letting the emotion be too much, he quickly gets into the huddle. They're going for two. They're going to win the game. And just watching his demeanor in that moment, I mean, I know me, I'd have been like too giddy. Like, I don't know that I would have been able to handle that moment, but he was cool, calm, and collected. He had a play in which there was a lot of moving parts. He had motion. He had a shift. He's rolling to his right. He hits Mason Taylor in stride. Two-point conversion's good. Tigers win. And just watching him in that moment, that's not really something that you can coach. You can't really teach it. You either have it or you don't. I have been around talented quarterbacks. I mean, guys that are first-round picks in the NFL that didn't have that. And there was a reason why they didn't, you know, play as long in the NFL. So he has that. It's in the pocket, but it's also when the moment's the biggest. I mean, I know we're talking about a lot of different games, but even a game in which they lost, like against Ole Miss this year, go back and watch the last play of that game. They're on about the 25-yard line. They've got to throw into the end zone. They catch it. They win. Now the receiver drops it. But for him to buy the time, stay calm in the moment, not try to force anything, he actually found an open receiver in that moment. The receiver just couldn't come up with the catch. Even in a moment like that, in a loss, he did his part to be able to set his team up for victory.
Well, it's interesting you point out the loss because I think the game for him, for me, was the first half of the Bama game before he got injured. I mean, he was incredible against the best defensive team they faced because Ole Miss couldn't stop anybody. Florida couldn't stop anybody this year. But what he did in the comeback against Missouri when he was hurt and also against Bama, I thought were moments that if you're not a believer, go watch the first half of the Alabama game. So we're talking to Jacob Hester, played at LSU, played in the NFLs, been around great quarterbacks, was at Jaden Daniels Pro Day yesterday. So tell me what people should be concerned about. We've talked about all of his positives. What are the concerns with Daniels?
I think when you start talking Jaden, a lot of people are going to point to his frame and some of the hits that he takes. And look, he's 210 pounds. Maybe he doesn't look like it, but the hits that he took last year, he took some shots. And you mentioned the Alabama game. He got knocked out of that game, the Missouri game. The Missouri game, I mean, I think he's got a broken rib. He's got a bloody elbow. He's bleeding out of his mouth and blood coming from everywhere. Now, he stayed in the game. He won the game for LSU. But I think that is one of the concerns when you talk to some scouts. Like, is it going to be a situation where he can stay in the game? He can stay healthy. He only missed a half or really even a quarter against Alabama, however long that was. I think it happened in the middle of the third quarter. And he did miss that because of a concussion. I'm not going to really use a concussion as something that's going to be something that would be, you know, kind of a risk now if he had a ton of other issues from taking hits. And and NFL is different than college football. We all know that. But that is one thing when you talk to the scouts. Hey, we got to learn to slide. We got to learn when to be smart when we run the ball. We can't take the extra hits. That would be something that I think Jaden needs to continue to work on, because he took some absolute shots last year. Ole Miss, Florida State, Missouri, Alabama. I mean, four shots off the top of my head that I know that in the NFL you might not get back up from. So if you're going to be a quarterback and you can make the throws, we're not saying that you're a running quarterback, you're a dual threat guy, you have to be smart when you run and what kind of hits you take as well. So that would be something in the NFL I think Jaden needs to continue to work on.
What are they going to learn about him as a guy, as a person? This is the stuff we as fans don't know, that the teams know with all the due diligence that's done. You're close to it. What are teams learning about Jaden Daniels, his character, his work ethic, his leadership, et cetera?
Yeah. So I'll just give you my personal experience. Being around the program, interviewing him, for Sirius XM or for the local show or whatever it's ever been. A Heisman Trophy ceremony, we're there in New York, and very gracious with his time when he doesn't really have to be. And a good example, Tuesday of this week, we had interviews set up, and he was supposed to be there at 10:15. Now, I didn't know if he was going to be there at 10:15. I'm like, this is Jaden Daniels. He's a top five pick, Heisman Trophy winner. He's got a lot of things going on, but he agreed at 10:15. And look, I've been in this game long enough. I know 10:15 can mean 10:45 for some people. You know that as well. But, 10:12 rolls around. He's in there waiting, ready to go. And I'm like, oh, man, I appreciate being on time. He goes, man, no, I told you I'd be here at 10:15. Like, I didn't want to leave you hanging or anything. And he knows me, doesn't know me well, but that's who Jaden Daniels is. And you talk to the SIDs at LSU, you talk to the social media directors, and they'll tell you the same thing. Like, this is the easiest guy we've had to work with, and he's a superstar. And not like, I'm not saying that superstars are divas or anything like that, but sometimes they've got so many things going on that sometimes they can kind of get lost in that. Every time I've ever had Jaden, man, he's been gracious with his time. He's shown up on time. He's been engaging. His teammates love him. Being around him and Malik and Brian Thomas the last couple of days around this pro day, just hearing them interact with each other, talk about, what they want to accomplish in their NFL careers and their rookie seasons and rooting for each other. And it's not just lip service, because I wouldn't put my name on this if I didn't think it was true. I mean, you're getting the ultimate teammate, guy with high leadership qualities, and just things like attention to detail, like being on time. It sounds like you should be, but again, been in this game a long time. That's not always the case, but his attention to detail is really elite.
Is there a place that you'd prefer him to go, like you think would be a good fit? Cliff Kingsbury's here as the offensive coordinator. Dan Quinn's the head coach. The owner who ruined this franchise for a quarter of a century is gone. It's a whole new group. But I'm sure you've talked about it on your show. Where would you like him to see? Where would you like to see him land? And what do you think is the best fit for him?
Yeah, so of the possible landing spots, you kind of try to narrow them down a little bit. I think Washington or Minnesota. If he's not going to go to Chicago, if Caleb Williams is going to be the number one overall pick, which we've talked about for 2 years, and he goes there, because that's a good situation. Like, if Caleb Williams goes there, by the way, that's a great situation with some of the weapons that they've added through free agency and trading for a guy like Keenan Allen. I think Washington and Minnesota, though, are probably the two best fits. For the Patriots, I think they have a long way to go. Now, Jerod Mayo's one of my guys, man. I played against that guy in college and the pros. I think he'll get them right, but I think it will probably start defensively there. Offensively, what weapons do they really have? That would be a question for me. Kind of the same thing in New York for the Giants. I think Washington and Minnesota can trade up like a lot of people think they can. I think those teams have weapons. They have receivers that you feel good about. They have running backs that you feel good about. And if I'm a young quarterback, like, I want to have some people that I can count on that are in that huddle with me. And so I think Washington, look, Cliff Kingsbury is a guy that maybe his head coaching record isn't the best. We all know that. But look at the guys that he's worked with as far as quarterback, and Patrick Mahomes and Caleb Williams and others. Like, he's got a long history. Like, I've known Cliff for a long time. Cliff Kingsbury took me out on my recruiting visit to Texas Tech. And so I've seen him all the way back in college. And if there's one thing he knows, it's how to develop a quarterback. And so that would be intriguing to me if I was in Jaden Daniels' camp, for sure.
Where'd he take you?
Gosh, we went to some great spot in Lubbock. Lubbock, a sneaky little underrated town.
Really?
But,
Lubbock
yeah,
is?
Yes, Cliff Kingsbury and Wes Welker, who ended up being my teammate later on in Denver. How about that? They were my recruiting host. They beat Texas that night. It was a big upset. I think Chris Sims was the quarterback for Texas. They were like a top 10 team. And, Texas Tech takes them down.
So I guess I've heard, and maybe it is Lubbock, I've heard one of the two, Lubbock or College Station, wasn't terrible. So is it College Station that's not great and Lubbock is okay?
Look, I'm an SEC guy. I can't come on any radio show and talk nice about Texas A&M. And so I'll just assume they were talking about Lubbock.
How did he – final question. I mean, these pro days, who the hell knows? But how did he do, and did you hear anything? Did you talk to anybody that was down there from Washington or any of the other teams? What was the buzz about his pro day yesterday?
I think it was the thing that we started talking about here in this interview. I think his deep ball was the thing that was kind of catching everyone. That's always just going to be a skill set that you look for. And pro days are pro days, like you said. I mean, we know that you're throwing on air, but there's also, you know, when are you hitting the receiver? Are you hitting him in stride? Is he having a stop? Are you putting him in a spot where he can make a play? Are you throwing it out of bounds? Peyton Manning used to always say it to us, never in the history of football has a pass been completed out of bounds, right? You got to give your guy a chance. And I thought he did a really nice job of that. We've always known the intermediate stuff is there with Jaden. And you go back and you watch some of that tape, not only from LSU in 2022, but Arizona State as well. That stuff's there. But his deep ball just continues to be the thing that is going to shine there. He was the highest graded deep ball thrower in college football last year. And that was the thing. It's hard. Like, the intermediate stuff's great. And I love that. But it's hard not to go and ooh and ah whenever you see him go put on a show like he did yesterday. But Washington, I was sitting pretty close to Dan Quinn. You could tell he was watching every single thing that Jaden did. And it looked like they walked away impressed. And so, look, if Washington selects Jaden Daniels at number two, I think they finally answered that question they've had for a long time of who's going to be our franchise quarterback for a long time.
Jacob, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. Y'all enjoy the rest of your day.
All right. Jacob Hester at Jacob Hester 18 on X on Twitter, SiriusXM 104.5 in Baton Rouge, longtime football player, played with the Chargers, played with the Broncos, and had a great career at LSU. Draymond Green really seems to have lost his teammates. More on that next.
The big news of the day announced yesterday, Caps and Wizards are staying in D.C. There was a press conference where Ted and Muriel Bowser looked very friendly. Apparently, they were going on dates. That's according to Ted Leonsis. Nobody saw it, and he criticized all the investigative reporters in the area, as Ted does. His team lost yesterday. The Wizards in Brooklyn, 122-119 in overtime. Jordan Poole had a great game, though. 38 points. That's a season high for him. Arguably his best game as a Wizard. Unfortunate that it was in defeat. Caps on the road against the Maple Leafs tonight. Big one for the Caps, looking to maintain a lead over the Red Wings in the wild card. Potentially jump Philly in the Metropolitan. Puck drops at 7. You can hear it on our sister station, 106.7 The Fan. And that's what's trending.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
So last night, Draymond Green got thrown out of the fourth game that he's been thrown out of this year. Remember, he had the long suspension as well, came back in January. They were playing the Orlando Magic. The Warriors were on the road. The Magic have been really good recently. Had a five-game winning streak recently and then lost a close one to Sacramento before losing last night at home to the Warriors without Draymond Green. But, man, I don't know if you guys have seen the reactions to the Draymond Green action last night. So it's fun to the game. You are 4 minutes into the game, and he's been arguing with referee Ray Acosta already during the early portion of the game, and there's a foul called defensively against Steph Curry, and he argues it, and then he says something that he shouldn't have said after he got teed up the first time on the way back to the huddle, and he got tossed. The reactions were priceless last night. First of all, the effort now to stop him when he gets started is very, you know, lukewarm. They understand they cannot stop this guy once he gets started. There's a resignation that once he starts, you know, you can try to jump in front of him, but you can't shut him up. It's not going to happen. When he got tossed, there is this shot, I don't know if you've seen it yet, Denton, of Steve Kerr rubbing Steph Curry's back as Steph Curry is just hunched over, you know, with the mouth guard hanging out of his mouth and his, you know, head in hands. Like, you got to be kidding me. Steve Kerr said after the game he deserved it. He'll bounce back. It was unfortunate, but he deserved it. Meantime, they pulled off the win, which was a really impressive win on the road. I know most of you aren't following the NBA, but Golden State right now is in a fight to make the play-in tournament. You know, they're in the 10 spot right now, which would put them in the play-in opportunity, but they're only a game ahead of the Houston Rockets, who have won 10 in a row out of nowhere. One of those wins was last week at Capital One Arena against the Wizards. And to lose a player, you know, I've heard people say, why do they even put up with it? Well, because he's so valuable. Anybody that knows basketball knows that Draymond at his best is such an impactful player. He doesn't need to score to be one of the most impactful players on the court. He's super high IQ. He is their best defender. He's one of their best passers. He's great at understanding what's going on the floor, anticipating things. He just can't control it, man. I know that he has and is working with a therapist. I mean, can you imagine the meeting today? You got to be kidding me. This is what we were talking about. He can't stop himself. And it looked to me like last night with Steph Curry in particular that they have just gotten to the point where they're just tired of it. Like, he's so great, they've put up with it, but they've tried so hard and it just won't stop. There's this shot, by the way, as they walked off the floor after pulling off a very impressive win without Draymond Green, of Draymond in the tunnel greeting them with high fives like, you know, nothing had happened. I don't know how much longer this lasts. Look, the Warriors' run is really winding down here anyway. They are four games above 500. We'll see if they get into that play-in tournament. That play-in tournament could include a Warriors-Lakers first play-in game to advance to the next one as the 9 and 10 seeds. But Draymond, man, he has issues. 4 minutes into the game, he got tossed. Fourth time this year. Only the second player ever to be ejected four times in a season, multiple times. Kevin Durant's the other one. I didn't realize that. I would have thought it would have been. What?
Did you see this? So you mentioned that picture about Draymond being in the locker room walking back. Did you see some of the memes?
No.
My favorite one was it was just a caption. The caption was, if I was Steph Curry, I would have punched this dude in the face on sight. Which he would never do, but
Steph Curry looked so dejected last night. He looked exhausted. It's like, you know, and he said some of the right things, I guess, afterwards. But in the moment, it was like all of them looking at each other going, are you serious? We've gotten him all the help he needs. We've gotten him all the therapy. He's made all of these promises, but he just can't do it. And I don't know, have you ever listened to his podcast? He's really bright.
Yeah, he's going to be on TNT.
He's excellent. He's a smart, thoughtful guy that clearly has a screw loose that he cannot control. But, man, he's great. And he's, you know, got several rings. So there is that, too. And, by the way, probably a Hall of Famer. I don't know if I'd have to think about this. I don't know if I've given that thought on Draymond Green. Maybe not. But, man, people understand how valuable a piece he has been to what they've had over the last 10 years. All right, we'll get to some of Denton's news next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.